You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
You're listening to episode number 46 of Living the Dream with Rory O'Malley. If you like the podcast, subscribe, rate, and review. If you don't, why don't you examine your life choices?
Audition, side job, swimming upstream. Believe it or not, you're living the dream.
Hey Dreamers, Rory O'Malley here. Thank you so much for listening to Living the Dream. My guest this week is Nicole Parker. Nicole has a killer story about being in Into the Woods in high school. You will not want to miss that story. I'm going to remember it forever and be telling it as theater folklore for the rest of my life. She's a theater person, but she ended up getting into the comedy scene, into improv and sketch, and then got on Mad TV, and all of a sudden she was in a TV show. But she grew up loving Broadway, and that was her dream. So she got to make it come true with Martin Short in Fame Becomes Me, and then got to be Elphaba on Broadway and on tour. And so much of her story is getting to be a part of both of those worlds, comedy and Broadway, and kind of having to decide between one or the other. And I really loved getting to talk with her about how she made those decisions and how she continues to make those decisions. She's just so darn talented that it's been hard for her to kind of stick to one, because both the comedy world and Broadway love her and have given her opportunities. But it's very interesting to hear it from her perspective, because it's been difficult. You know, the grass is always greener. When you're doing one thing, you want to be doing the other. So listen to this really in-depth, great conversation with Nicole Parker. Thank you so much for being here,
Thanks
Nicole.
Thanks for having me.
We have a lot of connections.
Oh my God, so many. Beth Crosby.
Beth Crosby.
Yes.
Yes.
And she's then, my friend from high school.
Yes.
Right.
A friend from high school. You guys grew up together in Orange County.
In Irvine. Yeah, that's
Irvine.
Right.
Irvine.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And so did you go to high school together, or you were just in the same?
No. It was three high schools in one city, all connected by the same long street that went all the way across from the end of the town to the other end of the town. And that's what I love about it, is that like—
Three high schools on one street?
Yes, but like miles apart. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It is funny. You could drive down Culver and literally hit all three. And University High School, which is so cleverly named because it was next to the University of California, Irvine. It was just university. So uni.
Uni.
And we were like the academic school. Woodbridge was like the athletic school. And Irvine was kind of like all around great. And they had a really great drama department. Right. And it was such a thing that like all of the drama departments would go to each other's shows. And it was such an event. I was just down there, obviously, the other day. And I was like, God, I remember this. And I remember going to see Beth in shows. I remember she was Adelaide in Guys and Dolls.
I bet she killed that.
And I had a huge crush on the guy who was playing, at that time, what was his part? Because he was in Charlie when they did that play, you know, about
Charlie's Aunt.
Flowers for Algernon. That's right. So how would you know that? They called it Charlie, but it was Flowers for Algernon.
Right, okay.
And I was obsessed with him. And like Beth knew this, and it was a whole thing. And like he looked like Robert Sean Leonard, and that was like my,
that was the
penultimate guy for me.
For sure.
So it was this whole thing, like, they come to see our Into the Woods, we go to see their Guys and Dolls. It was like, it was just the most exciting thing ever. And like, Beth to me was like, she, you know, she's tall, dancer, glamorous, and was so cool.
Yeah.
And like, she had her own car. I didn't have my own car, so she had a Honda that always smelled good.
Yes.
And that part of Irvine was like a little bit, I don't know, it just felt like the coolest part of Irvine.
Oh.
Irvine High to me was like the coolest
you
place to go.
You came from the wrong side of the tracks.
Just the nerds. It was just a bunch of nerds who were taking AP classes and
could not
play football.
You were the right side of the tracks.
That's right. If you, depending on how you want to look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Beth was at Carnegie Mellon at the same time I was.
I know.
And she was a senior when I was a freshman, and she sang Every Day a Little Death and a Little Night Music. And she like killed it. You know, she's just so, so funny. And when I moved to Los Angeles and didn't know anyone, we were both in the same show, Jesus' Kid Brother, a 99-seat theater show. And I remember it was like, I think you had either already come out here or you were coming out here at the same time. You like stayed with her while you were auditioning.
That's right. I totally remember that. Yeah.
From Mad TV,
well,
right?
Because we were doing a musical together in what is now the UCB Franklin space in LA.
Okay.
It used to be called the Tamarind Theater. Don't know where I just pulled that out of. And it was written by a Second City director, and it was a spoof of Romeo and Juliet. And she played, I played Juliet, and she played Lady Capulet.
Oh my God.
So it was really great. We got to be in a show like all these years later.
Yeah.
And they took that show and they did it at Chicago Shakespeare, and I did it once, and then she did it the second year and met her now husband doing it, which is so sweet.
Yeah.
Who else do we have in common? Well, probably, I mean, look, anyone. But
well, my husband went to IU.
He did?
He did. He was a singing Hoosier.
He was a singing Hoosier?
With Brent. Yes.
With Brent Real?
Yes.
I lived with Brent Real.
I know.
Oh,
I know.
My word.
I know.
This
we've never connected about Brent, but I was like, I told my husband, I was like, Nicole's coming over to our house today.
Oh my God.
And he was so excited. He has
Wait, that's great. So then we just missed each other, or he was there when I was there, or right when I left.
No, he graduated. I'm older.
But he was there with Brent.
I think they might have crossed over 1 year. However,
wow.
The IU singing Hoosiers are like when you get to New York. I mean, Gerald isn't even a performer, and he moved to New York because all of his friends from the singing Hoosiers moving to New York.
Yeah.
So I think that he became friends with a lot of those folks who are the singing Hoosiers, which is
we don't have quite the strength of the Carnegie Mellons and the U of Emers.
Listen.
But there is a nice little network of singing Hoosiers, or hooting Seizures, as they used to call us at the music school. All the opera singers hated us because we were just the loud ones.
Right.
But who had seemingly had no technique. Just plant your feet and go.
Right. But I've watched many a video of singing Hoosiers.
Oh,
I've never
Lord.
Gotten to actually go to a show. But, I mean, the amount of dedication and love and effort and and there's so many of you on a stage.
Oh, yeah. And
it's
I mean,
unreal.
If you look back at the pictures, it's like Elizabeth Stanley and me.
Yes.
And like, it's 90s fantastic where like all of us are out on the town at like Cincinnati because we did the Cincinnati Pops. And it's just everyone has the same uniform, black leather jacket, choker, and like dark cranberry lipstick, and just white. Because you know, you grew up in the Midwest, Midwestern winter. And I just have these memories of like, no one looked good in the dress. We were all very doughy, you know.
We were all happy.
Yeah, we were happy.
Yeah.
We were happy and we felt good about ourselves.
Yeah. Imagine that.
We were good enough.
Yeah.
And then just, I remember just being in places like Evansville, Indiana, and you're like getting ready in just a random choir room, putting on like tights when the last thing you want to do, you just want to be in sweats in the dead of January and you're just putting on tights and old character shoes and going
out
and singing
songs.
And
that's the culture of there. I mean, it's also like, because so many of the, did you do show choir when you were in high school?
We didn't have that. You didn't have that.
I know. We didn't have that in Ohio. And my husband did though. And I think it's very big in Indiana.
Yes.
And I remember when I met Gerald's mom the first time, and I said, I'm an actor. And I said, but I never did show choir. And she said, well, then how did you get into acting? I was like, what? I mean, that's like...
That's the only gateway.
To being an actor is through show choir. But that's how seriously it's taken.
Yeah.
And you guys...
I found that out when I moved to Indiana, and I was furious. I was like, what... it was that thing where we didn't have guy singers. I remember me and my friend Eric Shelley would go into the basement in my dorm on Saturdays because that's when everyone was going to the football game.
Yeah.
But we stayed because that was when no one was in there and you could sing A Whole New World and there was great acoustics and no one would bother you. Because to me, I was like, all I want to do is sing with men. Brent, because we just didn't have that at school. You know what I mean? We just didn't have it. So it blew my mind. But I was like, wait, this is a thing that's treated seriously by high schools across the country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. We didn't have that. Well, I went to an all-boys school, so it would have been a little little lopsided.
Although I did have an intense, well, we'll get to it. I had a very intense teacher in high school, so I got plenty of drama anyways.
Yeah. You mean in terms of like drama and...
You would have thought he was Wayne Cilento. Like literally the way that he treated our school was like he was... Yeah.
Wow. I mean,
but you drive this train.
No, tell me
drive
about
train?
It.
Drive train? I think I'm mixing my metaphors.
I'm driving the train.
I don't think that's right.
Let's fly the car.
You're in charge.
And
drive that's all
I'm
trying to say.
No, tell me about your high school experience. You had somebody who was a teacher who was really intense.
Yeah. I named him last year. I was doing a thespian thing with Barrett Fowell last year.
Living the Dream.
That's right. And we were supposed to tell a story about high school and like bring pictures.
Yeah.
And then someone later, and I told some stories about Mr. T. I'll just call him that.
Oh.
And people were like, oh, I have to work with him. I was like, oh, shit, I better watch my mouth.
Yeah.
I grew up going to the high school place because my sister was, at first we thought my sister was going to be in like the business because she took classes at this great place out called South Coast Repertory. Sure. Well, now I'm going backwards, but sorry.
No, yeah, it's fine.
It's a great regional theater. It won the Tony one time.
Yeah.
And a lot of great stuff has come out of it. So I was really lucky because that's where we both took. They had a Young Conservatory Players program.
Wow.
And so you, and they did three shows a year for kids by kids.
Right.
So I was doing that stuff like when I was 8 and 9 and 10. And then if they needed us in like the main stage shows for like the Christmas Carol or the Crucible or whatever, I was a crazy Salem witch at 10, whatever, you know, but I was working with equity adult actors. And so I, from the very beginning, I was like, oh, this is something that you can do for a living. And, and I also learned how to be professional backstage and learned everyone's strange warm-ups backstage, you know. And so I really wanted to go someplace real high-end for high school, for theater. I was really excited that in our town, they had a school where this man was very, very, you know, highly respected. He had like a reputation for being really difficult, but also put on great shows. And so I'd go with my sister when she was going to uni. I would go as a kid. And then I got there and his MO was that he'd threatened to cancel every single show three times. Once was the first day of rehearsal, twice was like during tech, and then the night before opening, which is funny because it's a school sanctioned event. There is no canceling it. But again, I'm telling you, you would have thought that he was Bob Fosse, like literally on, you know, and he was shrouded in mystery, like he supposedly had a lover that had like died and left him all this money and he still looks the same. Like, he has jet black hair, and he's very put together, you know.
Right.
The man doesn't age.
No, he's not.
Oh, okay. I think he works at, a community college now.
Okay.
But he would have this way of, he'd put the fear of God in you, you know. And he would, like, rent sets that were, like, professional. You know, it's not like, come on down to the high school. I've got some paint, and I'm going to build a tree for Into the Woods. It's like, we rented Into the Woods from, like, Pittsburgh Civic Light Opera. You know what I mean?
Shipped it in.
And then would, like, say that, you know, we weren't grateful, and he would refer himself in the first person, you know what I mean? And as he was talking to you, you wouldn't know that he was going to zero in on you. Like, he'd be like looking away from you. He'd be like, and I don't care if you don't think that this makes any sense, Rory. And then be like, you know, just like the fear of God.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, was just demanding and again, rented and like we did The King and I, he like cast like 30 kids just like you're supposed to.
Right.
There were like 30 children.
Like
in our
children.
Yeah, sure. Children for when they all come in and bow. He played the whole entire piece, no cuts whatsoever. Again, it's like it was the Lincoln Center version.
Like sometimes, like I feel like you have a lot of teachers who are, you know, so many wonderful drama teacher professionals, but sometimes they're like living out a dream.
Oh, that's exactly what he was doing. 100%.
Yeah.
You know, and it just became this. You know, it became a obviously more of like an in-joke where it was like, oh, crazy, you know.
Yeah.
But there was a very dramatic moment when the three high schools tried to get together and do like a joint production of Sweeney Todd because we were all obsessed with it. And we knew what everyone would be cast as. And we like had to apply for a special grant like to the school district and everyone was behind it.
Right.
And all of a sudden, like we had like our first rehearsal and then all of a sudden it was like done. And we were told by him that it couldn't go forward because it conflicted with the show he was doing. And we're like, he killed it. He killed our production. And it would have been so brilliant. Can you imagine what dum-dums were just like, no, we're like, we know enough about musical theater. We've seen the PBS special with Angela Lansbury. Know how to do it, which would have literally just been doing that.
Oh my God. No, my friends and I in high school, we used to cast every Sondheim show with all of our friends.
Yep.
Just a dream cast. And we'd be like, we can probably put this together somewhere. You know, we can get the money.
Oh, yeah.
You know, never happened.
And we did Into the Woods. And of course, I think it was I probably did shot for shot what Joanna Gleason did. And she was my hero, one of my heroes at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's just so not original to say that. You know, when you're growing up, like, I'm the only one who discovered this video. And then everyone says it when you're in your 20s. You're like, no, that was mine. That was mine, right?
It's like,
oh, everybody.
Yeah.
But isn't that funny how seminal that is? That was literally the only thing. It was that and the Sunny in the Park with George and then the Sweeney Todd. That was like it.
Yes.
So it was all Sondheim, which is amazing.
I know.
You know what I mean?
And that used to be what they showed on Bravo.
Yes.
That's what Bravo, that's why it's called Bravo. It was like the only theater arts.
It's not, oh, yeah, Bravo. It's not that guy now.
I know. I hate that. It drives me crazy. It's not like I'm not saying I mean, Bravo is on my TV all the
time. Fair enough. Look, I'm not here to judge.
I would love for it to be called something else because it breaks my heart when I think about Inside the Actor's Studio, which, hello, basically, what am I doing here? It's like my own version of Inside the Actor's Studio. Yes. You know? And the arts were on it all the time. Or like really good movies and stage productions.
Yeah.
Pippin was on there all the time.
That's right.
But yeah, we now there's different ways for people to access, you know, social media has really changed things.
Yeah.
And, you know, but for us, that was it. That's all we had.
That's all we had. And so, and of course, you know, of course we pushed him to do it. Like we have to, even though it is so difficult. We did it in college. She was like, this music is impossible. You're asking high schoolers to do it. But the fun fact about this is that A, our shows were reviewed. Again, he had a review. From the local, like, Irvine World News was the name of the publication. Reviewed. Who's that guy? Who's the guy that's a critic for high school shows? Now, that's a good story.
That's
a whole show. But, no, it was a notable production for the fact that we had a tower that Rapunzel was in, and she was a very tall basketball player named Sherry, and her wig was tied onto a little piece that I was supposed to yank off as the baker's wife, and one night, when the reviewer was there, I yanked, and it didn't come off, and then I yanked a harder time, and then it didn't come off, and then I pulled it really, really hard, walked stage right in time to turn around and literally see the entire tower fall to the ground. It cut scenery on the way down. It sounded like the world was ending.
My God.
I feel like your mom and my mom would get along well. She's from Detroit. She's a good Midwestern gal. Yeah. She said later, because she was in the audience, she's like, and wasn't Sherry good? She just rode that thing right down. I'm like, what was she supposed to do? She rode that
thing. She didn't
fight
it. She didn't fight it.
Like, gravity was what it was. I don't know what you're talking about. She didn't have time to be like, what should I do?
She yes-anded.
She almost landed in the orchestra pit. There, I mean, it's insane. I turned around and I looked at the girl playing Cinderella, who is now hilariously my sister-in-law, but at my best friend
God,
at the time. And I was like, I didn't know if they were going to go on, right? Yeah. And I was like, there was just silence. And then there's that moment where you're like, I can try to make it look like it was supposed to happen. I think I went, oops. But she wasn't moving. So then Carl Stensky, this big sound guy, comes running down the aisle, gets on stage, gets her up. She looks at the audience and goes, bye, and then walks off. And they called the firemen. And literally, she's having to explain to them. She's out of it. She's like, I fell out of a tower. They're like, what's happening? Why is this child?
Wait, did the show keep going?
They did not stop the show, is what I'm telling you. I ran. I looked at the conductor. Oh. No one stopped. Everyone just kind of stood there looking at me. So I went to a girl, Cinderella, whose name is Katie. And I was like, come on. And we went right into, you know, bum, ba, da, ba, 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 you know, and did the whole shoe thing. And the whole entire time, like, the door keeps opening and I can literally see the siren lights. And now I'm like, it takes two. Oh my God, I thought one was enough. It's not two. Dear God. You know, I'm like looking off. We didn't stop. And the thing is, the baker's wife has to literally be on. See, this is where your mom will be like, that girl should slow down and be quiet.
No, this is where everyone else is dying. But this is, I can't believe this is
the baker's wife stays on for like a good chunk, like 20 minutes. There's like three numbers she has to do so you don't get a break. And the whole time, I am telling you, I thought she was dead. Like, I'm not joking.
And yet the show must go on.
The show must go on, question mark?
I'm like, there is no way in hell that any Broadway show, if something like that happened, would keep going.
This is what I'm talking about when, like, people in, like, smaller communities, you know, have too much power where they think, like, this is what would happen. It's like, no, actually, equity would shut the thing
absolutely
down.
Absolutely not. Everyone would go home that night.
Exactly.
Like, the show would, it wouldn't
exactly.
be a pause.
Yeah,
it would be like,
refunds at the door or whatever.
Yeah.
No. We just kept going. Now, I will say that the show kind of stopped, you know, in terms of like, we didn't do anything while he got her standing up, but like, we did keep going.
We cleared the field.
We cleared the field.
With the injured player.
But I was the only one left on stage, of course. So then like, you know, we just had to make sure Cinderella ran on. So I get off stage. I mean, when I think about it sometimes, I'm still like, what if it had gone a different way? What if it, you know, and so this is amazing. She's a champion. She was an athlete. She finished the show.
I can't.
And we changed the line. You know, when I say, the witch is like, I was a good mother. And she goes, or she says, what did I ever do to you? She's like, well, you locked me in a tower, which I fell out of. That's what she said.
She said that?
Yes.
That's brilliant.
And it was brilliant. And the best part is, the review, I think they were freaked out the whole entire time. Again, why did the audience? These were parents. Why weren't they like, excuse me, we should stop this? Where were Sherry's parents? How did they not get sued? I don't know. How did he not get fired? I mean, it is insane, but the review.
Yes.
You know how, like, it'll be like an in bold type before, like, a descriptive paragraph?
Right.
Literally said, hurtled to the stage with a sickening thud. I'm not kidding.
Oh.
And every time I was mentioned, it was like, Parker, despite the mishap, turned in a good performance. Or, like, it was actually critical. You know what I mean? I was like, Parker was visibly shaken, but was managed to continue. I was like, what is wrong with you? You know? And then it said, perhaps next time, as if there's going to be a next time. There's like three shows, you know?
Yeah.
So like, next time, perhaps have her take out a pair of oversized scissors and fake it. Certainly not as dramatic, but a whole lot safer. And I was like, do you think that this was not my choice. People like at school were talking about, they're like, oh, here to kill Rapunzel. I was like, oh my God, it was not my fault. It to this day, it's like my husband's favorite story. Well, it's one of them. That he'll just tease me about it.
I can't believe this is real.
This is fully real.
This is fully real. This is like what, you know, one of those like, will I have to kill you with this poison tip shoe, Chino?
Yes,
you
know, exactly. Like, yes. How many shots in the shoe and the gun or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, West Side Story. Yes, this will probably be turned into some sort of, but it was fully real. And honestly, I've seen that girl a couple times. I was doing Funny Girl down in like the South Bay where she lives, and she was like, fully brought it up. She's like, well, you know, he almost tried to kill me that one time. I was like, oh my God.
Can we please not have that be the story that I am responsible for the scenery?
Like, come on. Oh, and the sound, I can't even explain it to you. Just in a slow motion.
Yeah.
But there were like three shows afterwards, and every night, he had to write out on the back because there had been no safety. You know what I mean? So that man stood there, our teacher, stood there in the back, like on it to like help weight it down. And then they added weights, but he rode out with it every single time, I guess, just to show his solidarity. And also maybe he was like told he was going to get fired if he didn't do that.
Oh my God. It didn't get cut? Like, that's
no,
amazing.
Like,
have her stand on
this
a
is
chair.
What's amazing about it. There was no equity meeting the next day. There was this high school.
Can you imagine?
You know what I mean? Oh,
like,
can you imagine?
If that happened on Broadway.
Patty would be like, this tower is not safe. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Yeah, it's funny because, like, when you're in high school or a community theater and you're doing it because you are passionate, you go to some pretty extreme lengths.
Oh, yeah. You're not thinking. And the thing is, you don't, again, until you join a union, you don't even understand, like, oh, we have any kind of rights.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, we can say
yeah.
No, even do still, we don't learn that.
Yeah,
but like,
break, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me just getting, I remember, you know, just getting like a 10 minute break every hour and 20 minutes. I was like, oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So it's funny for me now if I like cut myself like during rehearsal or whatever, and the way a stagehand rushes to get, or a stage manager rushes to get a band-aid, I'm like, oh, this is nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me tell you about Rapunzel. She needed more than a band-aid. Yeah.
I cannot believe that there's like sirens and that the fire department shows up and the show just keeps going.
Yeah. And you know, what was also terrible is that she was a beautiful Indian girl. And because we had a lot of Asian students at our school, lots of Chinese students, lots of Korean students, lots of Indian students, and a lot of them were in this show. And when we look back at the video, like, it's had to have been him. Like, he wanted everyone to look uniform. I'm not even kidding you. She was basically in such white face.
Oh,
I'm not kidding.
God.
So just imagine what these paramedics see. They get here. It's a tall Indian woman, beautiful woman, with like white
like
grease
powder.
Paint on, who's like, I fell out of the tower. It's just, it's too good to be true. It's too terrible to be true.
Orange
really,
County's
but.
Like, we got to shut that high school down.
That's right. So cool. Irvine High might have been cooler, but we were all where all the action happened.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Apparently.
It's my first review. Rough, real rough.
I can't believe that. A review of a high school show.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing theater in high school. When did you start getting into the comedy scene? Was it in
happened,
college?
I've literally tried to trace back to this because sometimes it's, you know, caused issues for me because you have to choose or, well, it's going to be a constant battle. I've just accepted it inside me for the rest of my life.
Well, tell me exactly what you mean by that.
Okay. The fact that when you love two things exactly the same,
right.
But they're two disciplines that intersect every once in a while, but they are different enough that in order to like go to the very top or to feel like you're at the, you know, whatever that means, you know, that maybe should you have picked one, or maybe do you have to throw more focus into one than the other, and then does the other one sort of, you know, fall by the wayside? And I have had to think about it in certain times, and I swear to God, it started literally at the same time. Because when I did that show at a show, when I did my first recital at SCR, the place where I took classes as a kid, I was 8, and they put you through this whole thing, sing, act, move, speak, you know, and you learned improv. They were teaching us improv at 8. They were teaching us, you know, a little bit of music theory. I remember all these women and men, they're all my mentors for life. And we were doing this, you know, 20-minute presentation on a Saturday of like a Little Lulu comic strip. Little Lulu is like an old comic strip, like Archie or something.
Yeah.
And Google it. It's okay. I didn't know it as a kid either. I mean, I remember the song still. That's how nerdy it is. But I just remember very specifically, I wasn't sure that it was a funny bit, but I was just playing her friend and I had this song to sing. And it really all happened at the same time. I was like, I love singing live. This is great. But then they were laughing and I was like, this is really great. Yeah. And I was like, done. I'll do this for the rest of my life. And that's truly, that was it.
Right.
And so by the time I think I got to like, by the time I got to high school, I was literally in my room listening to, I had all my mom's records. So it really was, I mean, I guess I'd say for a while it was musicals because I did want to, I was in tap dance. It was like the only thing I could really do. I was never very flexible and I couldn't turn, but I could follow choreography very well and I could tap up a storm. I mean, like I went to 42nd Street, like the touring company here, and it's not even here anymore, Schubert Theater, RIP Schubert Theater.
Yeah.
And I was so into it. We sat in the front row and I was so into it that at the intermission, spoiler alert. Just kidding. But you know how they act as if Dorothy has sprained her ankle,
right.
And the director comes out and he's literally like, sorry, the show's canceled.
You didn't know.
Inconsolable.
Oh,
I lost my shit. I was like, you know, I mean, it was, my mom still talks to me to this day about this and is like, well, we paid good tickets for that front row stand now. And the conductor had to turn around and say, Nicole, it's going to be okay. Which I'm like, I probably know that conductor now.
Yeah.
And I mean, people in the lobby were like, what's the matter with this girl? It was just like, I was so into it and so invested that I really believed that it was over. Oh, and thank goodness it wasn't.
That
play within
the play thing really
got you. Oh, it got me. It got me to the core. So yes, I would straight up like play. So it was old timey musicals. I mean, I'm talking MAME. I'm talking Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah.
And I just had these records and I would definitely act them out in my room. And here's what's funny is that during the overtures, I would pretend to be in the dressing room getting ready. When I'm like, you would absolutely be ready, but some people wouldn't. But I didn't know about half hour. I thought you could literally just show up 5 minutes before. Some people try to.
Yeah.
And then just throw on your makeup and talk about your day. And then, oh, let's all go downstairs after 5 minutes.
Yeah. People actually say that to me all the time because I come in as the king.
Fair enough.
Like 10, 15 minutes into the show.
Right.
And people are like, well, you don't have to get there.
Yes.
At places. Do you? I'm like, yes.
Those are the rules.
I mean, it's not that much more time.
Exactly.
Just because I'm not in the opening number, people think I can, you know.
Totally. So anyways, the point is, while I was like in my room listening to and learning all the words to, I don't know, Your Fault from Into the Woods.
Right.
I was also falling in love with Gilda Radner. We had, on Nickelodeon, back in the day, Nickelodeon had Nick at Night and they used to show old SNL for us episodes. And my dad was the, the funny guy or whatever in the family who sort of was like, here's a thing you should watch, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was watching Laugh-In', which again was the SNL of the 60s, you know, in the 70s. And I was watching Carol Burnett and I was watching, and I have to say, when I think back to my earliest memories, I was like, I'm equally obsessed with Bernadette as I am with Madeleine Kahn. But, you know, she's a good crossover. Anyone who did both, you know, and I realized she did both. But like, obsessed with Gilda, obsessed with Carol. Oh, but then I'm obsessed with Angela Lansbury. You know, it happened at the same time. So for me, the best stuff was people like, say, Bette Midler, who I could watch doing both. You know what I mean? Being a body comic. And being, you know what I mean? And like being being an entertainer.
Yes.
And that's the thing where I was like, I really like being an entertainer. You know, it's just kind of like, that's the connection. But yeah, I had this VHS tape that was the best of Gilda Radner that I think every girl comedian at that time had, and I wore it out.
Yeah.
And then was like that idiot who was like doing it in choir at high school, like do the Rosanna Redana monologue. I mean, could I have been it? Thank God it kind of worked out, because what else could I have ever done if that's what I was doing at 15? So
clearly
embarrassing. but then I started doing like student council, and like we had like one of those large ones where you got to have like 25 positions. I mean, I was the fine arts commissioner. What in the world does that
commissioner
mean?
Commissioner.
Yes.
You're hopefully not in charge of sex.
And this is, no, it wasn't my fault, Rory. No, this is like incredibly nerdy. My brilliant idea was, I was like, well, we'll have a Fine Arts Awareness Week. Like, it was something that needed to be, like, it was like Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
Did
or
you
something.
All wear ribbons?
Oh, no, it was better than that. My brilliant idea was that in every respective class, freshman, sophomore, whatever you were reading at the time, whatever play you were reading that year, whether it was Hamlet or Crucible or what's that one by Oscar Wilde, Imports of Being Earnest.
Oh, sure, yeah.
We would burst into the classroom and just start doing a scene from Hamlet or from the Crucible.
My God.
Unbelievably nerdy. And we thought we were doing guerrilla theater. We're like, this is going to be so freaking rad. We're just like, run in and do the chamber scene with Hamlet and his mom.
Theater.
It is ridiculous. It's hilarious. You know what I mean?
I mean, that's kind of... So you actually got to do it?
Yes!
That's amazing.
Went and talked to every English class. Because you know how it is, like, as a drama kid, when you're in high school, if you're in something like French or whatever, and you have a project, do a skit. That's all you ever had to do, right?
Oh,
do a skit. And I think that was my earliest writing example. When I'm applying for college. my earliest writing experience, which was, I don't want to write a paper. I know I'll do a presentation in class, so I'll write a sketch. I'll write a skit. And then I would immediately learn how I could get a laugh and then learn just the musicality of that. And then when we were doing... So yeah, when I was Fine Arts Commissioner, no big deal. So stupid.
I didn't know I was having a commissioner on the podcast.
Well, my security's outside. I have a security detail. I would watch everyone during the meetings, and it just happened naturally. And also because my mom is a speech pathologist, and she would really teach me about all the different things people had that she was fixing with them, you know, overbites and underbites and lisps. And I learned how everyone has something about their speech.
Wow.
And it's because of her that I started doing impressions in the first place. But I didn't even realize I had impressions of everyone until the end of the year when I don't know what possessed me to do it. But as we've already seen, it doesn't take much to have me do weird things. But I did like a whole meeting where I played all 25 people, you know, and that was a combination of I can impersonate people, but also like I liked writing the jokes. I liked knowing that this is probably going to hit or this is probably going to get them. So then the next year, I did the same thing. I was on council again. I don't know. This time I did like the morning announcements, equally as embarrassing. But like did the same thing. And so I'm telling you, like, while I'm loving Into the Woods, while I'm obsessed with this, the whole year I'm watching people and I'm working on my sketch and I'm writing that and trying to figure out what the best laughs would be. And also, not to mention the fact that I was a huge nerd, but I could make people laugh. I was the kind of person that, like, the cheerleaders would be like, oh, you're so funny.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, I could hang in the back parking lot with them because, thank God, I could make them laugh.
Yeah, it was a great tool.
Because there was doesn't even really, like, cover it. I had braces till I was 21. That's junior in college for the kids at home keeping score.
But, no, it's like comedy is a tool for us.
Yeah.
And it's almost like once you learn that power of making somebody laugh, especially,
it is very powerful.
Yeah.
It's very powerful.
High school, being the class clown.
Yeah.
It's...
And it was satisfying. And here's another reason why I say it's always a battle. Because in some ways, sometimes it's satisfying in a more fulfilling way when it's something that comes from in you that you created and wrote and you got a response.
Yeah.
Like, yes. You know, as opposed to sometimes how I felt where it was like singing a song, still amazing, but that was more like objective. People could either like my voice or they couldn't. But if you laughed, I knew you laughed and I knew you got me and I got you and I don't care. You know what I mean? Like it felt even more powerful in some ways. So I got something different from both of them.
Yeah.
So then when I could combine the two, it was the best. And I had like two jobs that have done that and I wish that they never stopped, you know?
Yeah.
So that when I got to college, I did think, I got into singing Hoosiers, but I also got into the improv group.
Yeah.
You know? And it was like perfect. And I was definitely the person who was like, see ya! And I was running from singing Hoosiers to the improv group, you know? And really, again, kind of not doing a great job at either for a couple years because I strung out too thin.
Sure.
That's also not the phrase. Why am I mixing? I think it's either just strung out or spread
strung
too thin.
Strung out. Drive this train.
I spread the train. I spread the train too thin. Do you know what I'm saying?
I get it.
Let me tell you.
I get it. I speak your language.
Yeah.
But I think that it's interesting because a lot of times, you know, like I was not bit by the comedy bug in the way that you were. I was in an improv troupe, but I also had like, I had my buddy James Asmus, who was the comedian.
Oh.
You know, he was the comedian.
Yeah.
Then I actually had a friend, my buddy Nick Lowe. He was the singer. Mm-hmm. I was the actor.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and so you kind of like decide what you do based on what everybody else does.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Totally.
And I mean,
you're like, I'll fill this role.
Yeah. Because you're like, oh, this is what it must be that I'm better at based on what somebody else is. And like, obviously that's bullshit because you should never be comparing yourself to anybody at all. But when you're in a small pond and when you're in high school, it's like hard not to.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, this is where I can excel. I'll just be a serious actor.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought I was going to be, you know? And then I realized I was taking all that improv and singing all the time and, you know, things just happen.
Yeah.
But I know what you're saying. You're saying that it was hard for you because you get all this improv experience and you love musicals and you love comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, did you feel like you had to choose between one or the other after you got out of college?
Yes, that's the weirdest reason why. It's right before college. So, excuse me, we would like, you know, go to Second City and, and we'd watch shows. We would take workshops at Improv Olympics. So all these people... You know, we were deep in it, you know, like I was deep in it as much as I was like literally getting the brand new CD from the store, the fresh Once on This Island CD to listen to with all my friends, with Brent back at home, you know, they were just happening so simultaneously. And here's the other problem. I found that whenever I was doing the one thing, I had started missing the other thing.
Grass is always
basically can't be happy. You know what I mean? I'm impossible.
Yeah.
Except for, again, those few times where it felt like it was in balance. And I was like, that's what I have to find. I have to find, I can only be in musical comedy or I can, you know. But that, and I'd love to hear your feedback on that too, because I mean, you were in one of the most ultimate musical comedies. And it's like, that's its own thing too, actually.
Sure.
It doesn't always play by the same rules as improv. It doesn't always.
No.
It requires different strengths and sometimes, and the audiences also require something different. And I find that fascinating, but more on that later. At this point I was like, two things have happened. I made a lot of friends with Chicago improvisers, and two of those friends had gone on to this place called Boom Chicago, which I'd heard about. It was this crazy place in Amsterdam where Americans were going to literally do improv because everyone spoke English there. And then they were like doing corporate shows and traveling the whole European continent. I was like, okay, that sounds rad.
Yeah.
But I was like, I would probably never get in. And then at the same time, you know, Elizabeth Stanley, all these other people were making their plans for like moving to New York and how we're going to do it. And then this, my senior year, let's revisit Into the Woods. This time as the witch.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah. It's hysterical. And
hopefully
Brent
was
Jack.
Down.
Brent was Jack and Elizabeth was Cinderella.
Wow.
You guys, this is an all-star cast. Anjali Cabral, who's on a show called Life in Pieces on CBS. She was Little Red Riding Hood.
Yes.
And various others, if I'm forgetting someone, I'm so sorry. And I did that thing where I ran myself into the ground. I was doing Broadway Cabaret, which is a hilariously generic name for like the tiny performing troupe within the Singing Hoosiers, which Gerald probably knows about.
Yeah.
Like if you got picked to do Broadway Cabaret, what's that? Wasn't there a documentary about Stage Door and like Skylar is in it? Aston, right? And he's that documentary. And in that documentary, there's a group just like Broadway Cabaret. I don't know if you remember, this is very insider, but it follows them like they're like the elite group, and they start like slacking off and like having all these infights or whatever. And it's literally Broadway. I was just like, oh my God, this is, they get to go on the special gigs to like, it's like Dirty Dancing. They go to like the other place in the Poconos and do the dance, you know?
Yeah.
I was doing that. I was doing Singing Hoosiers, and I was doing the thing, and then doing improv. And I just like, I got sick, and I was doing some shows, and like all of a sudden had this random thing where now I was like having trouble singing. Like I didn't have as much power. Like I didn't know what was wrong. Here's what's terrible about that, especially. My mom is a speech pathologist who worked with an ENT who saw all the touring companies, the Phantoms, the Jean Valjeans, the Scarlet Pimpernels that went through LA. Yeah,
wow.
Or Orange County, more specifically.
Sure.
And so to have your mom know exactly what chords are supposed to look like. I mean, I was scoped from the first time at like 12, back when they had to go down your note.
So it's a
whole thing. And so that was rough because it was like, she was so, I felt like disappointed in me, and we couldn't quite tell what was wrong. It looked like maybe I had hemorrhage and then it had resolved. I mean, these are all words that are so scary to listen to if you're a singer. I know that. But I think in the end it was more mental than anything.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I just became this person who, like, I'd go to sing and nothing would come out. Like, it was so weird. I was like, but I was going to go to New York. And I was going to go. I really think, again, when I look back at it, I'm like, probably was just mental, mostly. You know what I mean? Because they were like, you look fine now, but there was probably some issue. Again, I didn't have the training that I have now. I didn't have any of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just kind of freaked out. So my witch was a very, I was giving you a very tentative, unconfident witch for that entire run. It's terrible. also, it wasn't the greatest production. But
Well, it wasn't as eventful it was a little as too, your high school production.
We were a little too cheeky and on the nose with everything. You know how it's so funny the choices you make back in college, you know, sure. where you're like, oh, I'll do that because they laughed hard, and so I'll do it more. And, so anyways, the whole point of that is that that summer I did a gig. Not terrible. Look, it was fine. It's a Grand Lake, Colorado. It's called Rocky Mountain Rep. They are wonderful. I love them. It's just that the summer was rough for me for other reasons. Anyways, I was doing that show, and my friend emailed me and was like, Boom Chicago's auditioning, you know, but you have to get back to Chicago like in a few weeks and just show up. And I went back to Indiana to like gather up my things that I still left there. I just graduated. Me and my friend drove up to Chicago that morning. I got there and it was literally people that I have seen at Improv Olympic shows, at Annoying shows, like people that I was like, I love these improvisers. You know right. what I mean? I was like, I can't get in with these people. And here's what's ironic about all this. I was like, if I get this job, this is great. Because I really was, I was very dramatic. Are you kidding? I was like, I don't know if I'll ever be able to sing 8 shows. I know you have to be able to sing 8 shows and maybe my voice isn't strong enough. None of this was right. This was all story I was telling myself. Yeah. If anyone had stepped in and been like, hey, you're fine. Like, also you're singing all summer. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
But I was a dramatic child. Totally not anymore. Just kidding. I'm still chatting.
Well, I mean, but also the fact that you're so aware of your vocal cords, that you were scoped, that you're so conscious of it.
Most people aren't. Most
I didn't
people,
even know what vocal cords look like.
That's right, what
like
they looked like, yes.
Until, like, probably 10 years ago, you
exactly.
know?
Exactly,
like,
until like, a problem happens.
Until something comes up.
Which doesn't happen
and
until
like,
later.
Oh, I gotta figure this mm-hmm. out. But you are like, what's
well,
going on?
Well, and because I had a mother that was in, she probably wouldn't even have suggested it. Do you know what I mean? I probably would have just, you know, waited for it to get better.
Yeah.
I just needed rest. Yeah. But because of all that, literally because of that, I was like, well, I'm just gonna go. I would have probably already auditioned for it, but I was just like gung-ho.
Yeah.
Now, when I got there, I was like, I can't do this. This is like insane. And it was one of the most stressful auditions to this day that I've ever been on because they're like, just be yourself. Like, be yourself. And also, right. you get like 5 games to prove you're the funniest, but also show you understand improv and you have to play on a team and not elbow people out of the way. And so, ironically, the second day was singing because they do all these singing games. And I was like, yes!
This is
because
mine.
Musical improv to this day is actually, if you want to say my favorite thing, it is my favorite thing in the entire world. And I could just, if I could just make a living doing that, then I would do that.
Which
but
we
I
both
can't.
Got to be
Which
on
we both got to you.
Podcast.
And you were so amazing.
Oh, you were, I was so mad because I was like, I'm so excited to do it. And then you were the week before me. I was like, oh my God, I have to follow Nicole. You
no,
were
please.
So funny. Those guys are so
it was,
great.
They're amazing.
I love it. I'm obsessed with it.
And off it's just my favorite podcast. Thing to do. So as I watched the whole rest of the room like shrink, you know what I mean? I was like, I've got it. You know, and I guarantee you the only reason I got in was because, you know, I tricked them, basically tricked them into being like, well, I'll be your singer, you know.
Yeah.
And I was not the funniest, you know what I mean? I was not the fastest, the most clever. But yeah, I could sing and I sang with confidence and, you know, really overcompensated that way.
Yeah.
So within weeks, I was now in October, was I still 21, 22? I mean, I had to get a passport, I had to do everything, and I went to Amsterdam. I had no idea what to expect. And it's one of those things where I think about it, and I have thought about it, like, what would I have gained by 2 years in New York, you know? But man, I wouldn't give up that experience. At the time, it was Jordan Biel and Seth Meyers and Ike Barinholtz and Kay Cannon, who wrote all the Pitch Perfect movies. I mean, it was... I was truly with the
I've
most
heard,
amazing comedians
with
in the
Seth
world.
Seth Meyers talking about this time and how.
Yeah, everyone. I mean, it is a boot camp of sorts. You can't even imagine.
Yeah.
Everyone arrives. I spent the entire year worried I was going to get fired. I got there on a Monday. My first show was a Thursday, and it's a whole 2-hour sketch and improv show.
Wow.
And you are given extensive notes afterwards. How you dealt with audience members. How you shot them down. If you didn't remember the girl's scene in that not name in that scene. How you handled this improv. How you did like. It was so overwhelming to me that for me, I was like, when we would get to the musical stuff, I'm like, thank God.
Yeah.
So now it was flipped because I was like, as much as I loved comedy, I was like using the musical thing as a crutch, really. Or not a crutch, but you know, it was my strength.
It was the thing that you felt. But see, isn't that so the artist in us to say the thing that you're good at is your crutch?
I know,
no,
yeah.
It's what you're good
Listen,
at.
Listen, this was... I don't need to tell you. I mean, this was, and there's nothing wrong with saying boys club. It just is. There's always, going to be more men than women
no,
in comedy.
Talk
and
about
at this
it. It's
time,
so true.
At this time, it was still very much a thing.
Yeah.
And you had to find your thing. And I was lucky. Music was my thing. I watched other women struggle because it was the kind of environment where, you know, if you're on time, this happened at MAD too to a certain extent, but like especially with the girls, you know, if you're 5 minutes late to rehearsal, they'd be like kind of disappointed. Whereas a dude might show up and he's 20 minutes late, but if he's got a good story about a hot Swedish chick and some really good hash from last night, oh, it's got a good story. And it's like, wait a minute, why is that? Why? You know, and there was that, you know, difference, but I learned really valuable lessons, which was, you know, women tend to be seen as, oh, well, like if we have a problem, it's it, all we do is bring problems or we're complaining. And it was like, if I had an issue or if I had a suggestion, not a suggestion, if I was like, I don't know if that joke works, you couldn't just be seen as, I don't know if that joke works. You had to have already done the work of like, and here are 5 suggestions that I thought about so that I have a solution for you. I'm not just complaining. I'm not just coming to you and be like, I don't like it.
Right.
I'm saying, I have 5 other suggestions. A, this is my issue with it, but B, I've already done the work. So I'm a team player. I'm here to provide answers and solutions. And it was a huge invaluable lesson to learn.
So what you're saying is you learned you have to work 5 times harder.
That is correct. You have just hit the nail on the head.
No, I mean, that sucks. That sucks. Mm-hmm. However, I'm sure that because you kept pushing and you did work 5 times harder, and you realized that that's what it was going to take, is what made you so successful at it. And you had to sink or swim right off the bat in a situation like that.
Yeah, I mean,
that's graduate school of comedy, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I literally did keep a journal still at that time, and it is, I am so mean to myself. I'm like, way to not get that location right, you jerk. Like, literally, I am just
in the improv. So, you didn't know improv, where the location
yes,
was.
Yes, yes, I didn't know where the location was. Wait to not, yes, and that roller skating suggestion,
oh,
you know.
My God.
And it was the kind of place where you had no choice but to be competitive. It was, you were so, now I will say, I mean, some of my best friends for life from there. Do you know what I mean? Like, most people were very lovely to me. It wasn't necessarily any individual going at me. It was a collective that of energy that if you're not the right type of person, you felt it more. And again, thank God I did the rap game we do every Friday, you know, where you do freestyle rap. I loved it. I understood that. I could rhyme quickly. I could do those things. You know what I mean? So I had my thing. And all you had to do was have just one thing, you know?
Yeah.
But they would literally do something called Line of the Night every night after the show. I don't know if they still do it. But after a whole 2-hour show, he would give you notes. And they'd be like, and Lines of the Night. And there would be 10. And there would be like a number one. And then they put them up on the wall. And there was a score of who was winning by aggregate and who. And literally there were some nights.
Of who came up with the funniest lines.
Yeah. And some nights, guess what? You weren't in any of the 10. And so you're like, what do I do? Just go home and be like, so I said nothing funny today. I mean, that was where we were at in our heads. Yeah. And it was terrible, honestly. Oh, I would not suggest it as a way to run a theater.
Was your high school drama teacher in charge of this?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it was this. It was really, really hard to, you know, build up the thick skin. And at the same time, everyone else was freaked out. I just love that Jason Sudeikis was there. And I didn't realize that he was there on loan from Second City, because the man was so nice and so modest that we sat at the bar and I would be like, I'm just so freaking scared. And he's like, yeah, that's a lot of pressure. And he was being genuine. But then when I found out later, I was like, he's just here on loan. He doesn't even need that nervous. Like, this is the easiest thing in the world for him. It's like breathing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, by the first year, it was a little better. And then I decided to say second year. But what's so funny about this is I was, 23? And I had started emailing with people like Brent specifically. Yeah. And they're telling me about what's going on in New York. And I'm just like, I am running out of time. I have got to stop living in Europe for free and getting paid and traveling everywhere.
I'm 23 years old.
I've got to get to Broadway. It's like, you idiot. Oh my God, you could have stayed 3 more years. Yeah. It would have been fine. Yeah. You know?
It's so funny. There are so, I mean, even now, like, don't you still have to, you know, that we're not 23 anymore.
What?
I mean, we're not.
Speak for yourself. No, okay, just kidding. Okay.
I'm with all those children in Hamilton. They're so young.
Oh, dear Lord. Kids. Oh, I loved it when you said that. That's how I felt on tour with Wicked. Of like, people are like, I'm doing a pirouette down the hallway. And I was like, I've got to get to sleep.
Yeah. No, they're very young. They're all like right out of college.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking about how I got out of college and thought time is passing by so fast. And I'm it's too late for me to try this or try that or do, you know, I had to, everything was kind of set in stone, you know? And I'm like, that's not true then. It wasn't true then. It's not true now.
You know, that's a really good lesson to sort of be like, don't make the same mistake you made back then. Like,
yes.
You still should be seeing that, because anything can happen at any point. And And that's a really good lesson. I've never heard that take before. So I
always like think of 10 years ago, Rory, and think, right. Oh, you were such a fool.
Yeah.
And then I do the exact same thing about now yeah. because I'm yeah. like, well, now I'm old. Now yes. this is set in stone. Yes. But that kid, he should have realized yes. he had his whole life in
yes.
front of him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's
I had the
right
whole
now.
World in front of me. Yeah. Right
you
when
know,
you thought it's over.
10 years from now, I'm going to still be able to grow even 10 yeah, years from yeah. that. So
my husband says I say to do the same thing with pictures 10 years ago. I'm like, oh, I was my skinniest. He's like, 10 years from now, you're going to say, look how good I look now. And I'm yeah. like, every time. I'm like, oh, look how I looked. He's like, you're ridiculous.
Yeah.
But yes, that is a totally good point. And
so you're feeling
I,
the pull
and
back
I understand,
to New
York. Look, when kids that age now talk to me, I try not to actually get mad at them because I realize they can't hear it. You can't hear it without no. perspective. I just say, I get it. Yeah. I totally get how serious and when they also say they're feeling they're getting old, because you know what, guess what, a 24-year-old, that's the oldest they've been so far, so yeah. that is the oldest that you are. 24 yeah. is the oldest you've ever been, so of course it feels old.
Yeah,
of course.
Especially when you have the new responsibilities of you have to feed yourself.
Yes, right, that really as well. And that's the thing I didn't think ancient. I was just like, and at this point, Seth had gotten SNL, and at this point, I can say, and Josh, Seth's brother, had gone on to get Mad TV. So then again comes this thing of like, oof, what do I want most? Like, oh, I really love SNL. But like, and I feel like I could do all my music stuff and my yeah. impressions and whatever. But Broadway, you know. Yeah. And also I was like, I'm so behind now. I've missed out on 2 years. And I've been singing in literally a bar where Dutch men can smoke cigars in front of me. So how? Yeah. But again, ironically, like I'm not thinking about my voice because it's been working for me for these 2 years sure. and getting me through everything. But yeah, traveling to the most unbelievable. I mean, I did the weirdest shows. I did an improv show on a speed train in Germany for like 5 Germans who didn't even speak a language playing a guitar. Like on it, when ding 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 is like going by, you know what oh I mean, and like German yeah, announcements. Yeah. You do finish that job, and you're like, I can do whatever, you yeah. know.
Walking
but
anywhere
it's,
and anything.
What really bothers me, this is very personal. What really bothers me is, and when I've had moments of trouble and like felt down and out, and talked to my friends from Boom specifically, they'll be like, all you ever talked about was wanting to be on Broadway. And it bothers me because I'm like, did I get this all wrong? I was like, if that was really what I wanted. But that's just my lizard brain going, whatever I'm not doing, I want to do more. You know right. what I mean? Still, though, it shocks me because I don't remember saying that. Isn't that yeah. funny? Like, I don't remember that.
People but if holding up a mirror to you.
Yes,
of what
they're
you
like, that's all
then.
You wanted to do. And I was like, really? I was like, but I was a comedian with all you guys. And you're like, no, you know? And so,
well, yes,
no, they're not
yes,
saying but, I wasn't. Yes, they're just saying you wanted like, to do this wanted, other thing.
Because, but... Look, I'm just going to say that. You don't have to say anything right now because I know you're pretty modest. Uh-huh. There aren't many people who can do both, Nicole. There just aren't that many people who can be the kind of comedian and have the comedic chops that you have and can also sing fucking Elphaba. All right? I don't swear very much
yeah,
on my
we'll
podcast.
Get, I love that you
that
chose to do it
is
before Elphaba.
That is the truth. So what
oh,
they are saying
nice.
Is they're like, they know that you singing in their improv, they're like, holy shit, this is a Broadway caliber performer improvising with us. So yeah, I mean, like, you stood out as somebody who was like, I love Broadway, I want to be on Broadway. And they were like, well, she's definitely going to be on Broadway one day. Which you were. So, yeah,
well,
I mean, but
thank you for
of
all
course.
That. This is very sweet.
I mean,
but that is at the heart of the thing, right? That I constantly come up against, which is I think people either see me as, oh, you're like out here, I'm the comedian that that does Broadway. And like,
right.
how amazing. They're excited
yeah.
just about that. I go to New York, like, yeah, Broadway, big deal. Oh, you do improv.
Yeah.
You know, and you go, oh, who am I? And it's right. just this, it's just this thing, and Elphaba's a whole thing, which I'll get to in a second, but I left, so yada, yada, yada. I left and immediately went to New York, and what was so funny about that is, and I was living with my friend, and it was so cute. I remember Brent Reel literally sitting down and giving me just a history of what I'd missed, right? He was playing Brooklyn for me, and I was like, what's happened since I've gone? Everyone's belting A's. Like, what is going on? And I was like, oh my God, I can't do that. And he was playing me Thoroughly the Modern Millie. And he was like, here's all the things that, here's what you have to sound like now. I was
oh
like, well, Jesus, I don't sound like that. And I was very scared. I was like, oh, maybe I can't. I just felt so out of the loop. You know what I mean? So I started doing the non-equity auditions. And what I found was, again, I was so loose and free in terms of like what I was doing in rooms and just be.
Yeah.
When you've done the stuff you've done at Boom Chicago, you are very less fearful of things. And
yeah.
willing to try anything. And what confused me is the first gig I got was a comedy gig, and it was literally doing impressions for a pharmaceutical company, I think it was Pfizer, at Walt Disney World. And all of a sudden, I'm dead broke, and I was flown down to like the Walt Disney Resort to just entertain these pharmacists for a week.
So did you have your set impressions, or they said
it was,
do these
what ones? They wanted was American Idol impressions was when it was all the rage.
Got it.
And I did a Paula Abdul, and then, but it ended up just being me. They're like, so you're just gonna, so yes, I did have to kind of essentially write a sketch, and it was just this dumb thing where they each got a stereo to listen. They split up into groups. It was like team building.
Sure.
All this stuff I used to do. I mean, I taught half of Holland Dutch businessmen how to do like improv games. It was like 2 years of my life. Oh, was my literally God. Teaching like Geert, guys named Geert, to like, oh yes, okay, I'm gonna tell a story one word at a time, you know. And so that was not new. Again, that wasn't weird to me. I was like, oh, okay, I'll do this. You know, I did a show one time for like people that were actually kind of on ecstasy and on drugs with Jordan Peele. We literally were there going, we cut the show in half. We were like, we're not staying. So, I mean, when you've done all these things, you know, but I remember like I was interacting with like I had a Goofy and a Mickey, and there were all these rules about them. Oh my God. Disney has a lot of rules about their characters.
Yeah.
So I did that, and I was just like, huh. Because see, now all my connections are in the comedy world.
Right.
And now I was going to UCB and like just guesting with them. And that's when I started with Baby Wants Candy, which is a musical improv group that Jessica and Zach still perform with.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, that felt comfortable now, you know? Yeah. So when Mad TV came around and became an option, it was strange because I was like, well, yeah, obviously. I mean, because I still want to do that, right? I was like, it's not SNL, but Mad TV's in California and I've been gone for so long. I could be back with my family. And at the time, three of my friends from Boom Chicago had now been hired there. So at that time, it was like, oh, that's my buddies.
Right.
And so Jordan and I and Keegan actually were the three that got from I knew Keegan too a little bit. But it was really weird, you know, because they helped us get the audition, but then you still had to go through like the five auditions or whatever. And I didn't know a thing. Again, it was a weird way to get into TV. It felt like by accident. You know what I mean? I was like, it's how it happens, right? You're like, I'm here to do one thing. I got a job doing another.
Yeah.
And again, I peppered it with singing. You know, I did Celine and I did Britney and Ellen and all those people.
Brilliantly. And, I love it. You keep going, oh, it's this big accent.
Oh, well, no. I'd love to take a pass at some of those Celine sketches. I'm so much, it's so much more accurate now. And I'll and then 10 years from now, I'll be like, oh, I was doing a horrible scene impression. But like in terms of like a test, I had no idea that testing was a thing. So I just thought it was yet another audition.
Yeah.
And testing will never be the same again because it's not a test like no other. You get to do your own material. So it's not just one or two scenes you go in and you, this is when you test for the network executives who never, for people who don't know that, and it's terrible and they never laugh. In this case, it's not like, oh, there's my scene, I did it, and it's over.
Yeah.
If they were laughing in the middle of it, I added some jokes. They don't know.
Right.
If it was going well, I added Megan Mullally or whatever the heck I did. You know what I mean? I was like, I get to do everything I can do. I get to leave that room feeling full. I was like, well, I left it all on the table. There's nothing I didn't do.
Yeah.
And, you know, every test since then has been so remarkably disappointing, not only because I didn't get it, but because I'm like, oh, this is not what I thought it was. I was like, I just walk into a room full of people and I just do my shtick. Great.
It's not that intersection of what you talked about before of getting to write it and have the ownership and that feeling of making them laugh because you wrote it.
I say all this realizing how incredibly lucky I was and privileged. It's only become an issue. It's an issue I did not consider at that time.
Yeah.
I am saying those things with hindsight. At the time, I was just like, I love both. It's always going to work out. I'm going to do Broadway. I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
You know, whereas the only reason I say about it now like it's a problem is because work stopped happening for a couple years. Yeah. And I started thinking, well, that's probably the problem. It's only trying to identify something I still have going on inside, not because I was upset at the time.
No,
at the time, I was like, I'm going to live forever and I'm going to work forever.
Right.
And neither is true. And that's okay.
Well, yeah, it is okay. It's also like I've talked about it a few times on this podcast that the difficulties of early success, and I know that like you certainly paid your dues by going to Amsterdam, but it was fast and lucky.
You
were in a network of work that like really brought you to Mad TV and you're in this, not a bubble, but you are supported, this is the next steps.
I don't recommend it. Here's the problem. When you, and I see it happen with people my age who have hit that same thing, and I'm not trying to be in a judgmental way. I'll recognize it. I'll be like, I know where you're at.
Right.
Because why wouldn't you be like this? You literally kind of think, I figured it out.
Right.
You go, it worked out. Right. I knew it. I knew it. I knew I was this good, and I knew it was going to be this easy.
Right.
You know, and you're like, I did it.
Right.
And it's such an unfortunate lie, you know. I mean, for some people, they just continually work. I mean, because that's the other thing. The whole point is I got that job and, again, went through a process of, like, not really knowing what I was doing. I still relied on music a lot, as you'll see. It's like all the music videos are me, and I loved writing them, and they were my favorite thing.
Yeah. And you were amazing and are amazing at them. So it's like, of course.
Thank you. But so the thing that came up was the Martin Short show.
Yeah.
And that show, honestly, is the show I could do for the rest of my life. That show was the perfect intersection of the two things that I love to do.
Yeah.
And it made so much sense. Like, everything made sense. Because it was me and Brooke Shastmanich. It was people like me, weirdos, who did a bunch of different things. We were good at these different things.
Yeah.
And people like Mark and Scott and Marty, who just wanted to showcase that. And I was like, I've died and gone to heaven. You know, like, this is crazy. I can't believe that someone finally came up with the show that I want to do, which is do your impressions, sing a sing a big song, do a sketch, do a character. And that was, again, that was the audition, you know?
That was like before or after Mad TV?
So this was complicated. This was while I was on Mad TV.
Wow.
And what, no one knows, why would anyone care? But nowadays, I would like have Insta-storied this, and I think it would have been very interesting, is that it was a huge big deal for me to do it. Dick Blasucci was the, he was an old writer from SCTV, old friend of Marty's, and the showrunner at Mad TV. The only reason I was able to do this was because of Dick.
Yeah.
Because obviously, I had a contract with Mad TV. I was now 3 years in, I think, 3 or 4 years in.
Yeah.
Which is, again, crazy that I was on that show for 6 years. Again, that's a bubble. I mean, talk about a bubble. And, but at the same time, I knew. I was like, I'm never going to work on TV again, which is a terrible attitude to have. But I was aware I've been lucky. You know what I mean? I just had this feeling. I don't know. I was like, I feel like I got really lucky. And this town is tough, and I can tell it is because I would go on a few auditions. And what a gift to go on a few auditions or even, say, do stand-up, which I did for a while. Doing stand-up knowing you have a job to go to is not the same as doing your 5 minutes when you are dead broke.
Yeah.
Like, those are the real heroes. You know what I mean? Like, I did stand-up, and I did okay, but my stakes were not high.
Right.
And so that, and also going to an audition, and then coming to rehearsal and being like, you guys, I had this awful audition. I could tell, oh, that's probably different when you don't have the job to go to.
Right.
So what happened is there was a workshop of Marty's show. They were fine with that. But then when it was going to go to Broadway, it was going to open in August. And
right when you would
start in March, we did like 3 different tours of like 3 different cities. I don't know why. It was rough.
Huh.
And that, because it didn't do well on the road and fully changed. And it was a whole other podcast is that.
Okay.
But the point is, I didn't realize that, again, this is being young. I was having the time of my life. Everyone else was miserable. Like, it was a very tumultuous time for almost everyone in that cast.
Yeah.
We had a blast together, but like the show wasn't going well. And, but you know, And I had to agree to this, and I had to pay for it all myself, and I could, because at the time, I was doing well.
Yeah.
But in order for me to open on Broadway, they're like, here's what you're going to do. For 6 weeks in August, starting in August, I would do the shows, and on Sunday afternoon, I would fly to I go to the airport, my mom would pick me up late at night here, take me to my apartment, I would do, like, camera blocking on Monday for Mad TV, I would do the reading, the table read on Tuesday, I would take a red eye on Tuesday night, I would do the Wednesday matinee and the Wednesday evening, sometimes I would turn right back around and come back here for Thursday, or alternating weeks, I would get to do Thursday taping, pre-taping, and then Friday I would fly back.
Oh,
so Jill Bromwitz, my understudy, did the two shows I would always miss. And I remember when they brought in the calendar, I was going to say yes to anything. I was like, this is Broadway. This is my Broadway debut. I'm not going to give this up. But I'm sure when I look back at it, I might not have had grace about it. I'm sure people were like, you're a twerp. You have a freaking television contract. And I'm like, you're busting our balls to try to do this Broadway show.
Right.
And it's, when I think about it, I'm like, yeah, probably could have. When I look back, I might have been embarrassed about how it, because, you know, I was very dramatic about it.
Right.
But
well,
I was only...
Big, when things are coming to you all at once like that.
Sure, but I mean,
dream.
It's like boohoo. But I was emboldened by the... I was only emboldened by the fact that all the other writers of our show were like, this is great publicity for our show. Wait, this is great. So the fact that I was only getting pushback from basically one person, it was... That's what made it a bummer. I think probably if everyone else was like, look, kid, this is the breaks, I'd be like, okay, everyone else was like, you should do this. This is amazing.
Yeah.
So that's why I was a little bit emboldened by it.
Well, and I didn't get to see it. But my husband did.
He did?
Gerald, he saw you in it.
Oh, my God.
And he's a huge Martin Short fan. Mm-hmm. He still talks about that as being one of the greatest Broadway experiences he's ever had. And he came, but he's an insane person. He came dressed as Clifford, you know, from Martin Short's
movie. Yes, yes.
He had, like, the little dinosaur.
I love that.
Yeah, he's a lunatic. But, but no, he talks about it like it was one of the most brilliant, hysterical shows ever, and so many people too. Like, it was a big success in terms of a show on Broadway. People loved it, and they still talk about it.
It's so funny because we did not think that. And it was always going to be a limited run, but everyone had the sense that this didn't work. Huh. You know, the reviews weren't great. It was right at the time of Spamalot, and it was in the same vein of... you know, an ironic poking fun at business type things, which has come in and out of fashion over the years. And so it unfortunately didn't get, it was either ahead of its time or way behind its time. It was one of the two. It's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
And yet, yes, I get great feedback from it and people loved it. But again, I didn't care. I was meeting, again, this is literally not to drop names, but Marty Short literally knows everybody. I mean, I became one-on-one name basis with Steve Martin and Eugene Levy and all these people that come in. And, you know, he had a Christmas party here that we all thought we died and gone to heaven. I mean, literally everybody. I sang a Christmas carol to Steven Spielberg, who was sitting on the floor in like a Christmas sweater.
It was
insane. And the other danger with that is people talked to me and act around me like, get ready, you know? And I was like, yeah, man, this is it. But what I learned, and this is the tricky thing about Broadway, is that, you know, and this is when I do teach, I don't want to totally be too cynical, but I think it's important that everybody knows, back in the day when I was listening to my records, I was like, I just have to do it, right? One time. I just have to get to it one time. I just need the one show. And this isn't groundbreaking what I'm saying. I'm sure other people have said this on this podcast, but I do find it amazing that it's not like other jobs. It's not like I just had to get into that law firm. I just had to do the medical school and get, you know, even though all that stuff is much harder in some ways. Cerebrally, certainly.
Yeah.
But you know, you have to get in the right show. And it's not even just like the right show. It has to be the right role, or it has to, and then if it's the right role, but then it closes early. Like, it just has to be a sequence of so many planets aligning that no one told me. So I was just like, well, I did Broadway, so I'm good, right? So now Broadway, but I had to go back to my TV show. Boo-hoo.
Yeah.
Fuck you. That's my one F. That's my one. you know, and it was like, okay, so I went back, and so that the show was still going on with Donna Vivino in it when I went back and got to close it in January. But that's the whole reason I got Wicked, is because I'm trying to go fast because I know I'm talking so much.
You're fine. You're fine. Okay. No time limit.
Okay, good. But don't tell me that. but that's the whole reason I got Wicked, which is really backwards about, because there was a Wicked parody in Marty's show. It was this ridiculous song that was like Marty's funeral. He imagines his funeral happens.
Right.
And it's like, the lights have dimmed on Broadway. And it's like this whole thing.
Yeah.
And we come out in like a witch hat and a whatever. And at that time, I hadn't seen it yet, which was weird, but I just hadn't seen it yet. And like, it hadn't come to LA yet. It was in Chicago. I think it had just started. Because this was like, what, 2004 or 2005,
yeah,
I think
it came out in 2003 because...
And I don't think LA had started. I didn't see it on tour. At the time, you literally couldn't get a ticket. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I was doing a show, but I was aware it was such a big deal. I was nervous when Julie Murty came to see Marty's show. I was like, oh my God, she's the current one. Like, she was doing it on Broadway at the time. Excuse me. And Bernie Telsey, who cast both shows, he was there one day when we were doing like a sound check, and he was like, you should do the real thing. And I was like, yeah, right. It was a huge joke to me because I really, here's the backwards thing. I didn't, vocally, I felt strong. I felt good. And I wasn't like nervous about singing for my Broadway debut, which is weird. It's important because of how backwards what happened next was, but I was more worried about being funny and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You also have great perspective because I totally did read the reviews because I didn't know about the time back in the day that you were
not
supposed
to,
or message boards.
Right.
And I didn't know. What did I know?
Sure.
The internet was new at the time.
Yes, yeah.
And I was like, this is, the people online are talking about stuff we're doing? How great.
Yeah.
And I remember this is another amazing lesson in youth and just in experience, that I remember going to Scott Whitman on opening night, and I was like, I just hope that they don't say something like, Nicole Parker ruined it. And he wasn't trying to be... condescending. He was like, oh, it's so funny how you think that, you know, that it rests on your shoulders, because I look back, I'm like, no, it didn't. It's like, this was all on Marty. Like, this is what you learn about people when they're the stars, that like, their heads on the chopping block. The writers and the,
how much they're someone's
not
going to
write
there.
About the twerp who did one song who nobody knows. You know what I mean? Unless it's like a breakthrough performance, which it wasn't. But literally, you know, it's just having that perspective. And also then realizing what a gracious man Marty is and how he let us play and how right. kind he was and how he would also be Uncle Marty and give you advice sometimes and give you tough love, you know. He's such an amazing human being and also a child. I mean, like, this man on stage, like, if we had a slow audience and they didn't laugh and I'd say a line, he'd whisper into my ear, I hate you tonight. On stage. On stage. And when I came back in I after Donna had been in it, and then they would have, like, another night where, like, it was a matinee crowd. He'd be like, Donna needs to get a laugh on that line. Right? I mean, he's the funniest man on the planet.
Yeah.
So... It was just, it's weird when I look back, I'm like, oh yeah, what a dum-dum to think that I would have something to do with the success this shit. You don't count yet, and it's okay. No, but you know what I mean? It's like, you need to learn how this works, especially in New York City.
Right.
Like, there are names that are going to be written about, and they know it, you know what I mean? And this is why it's good to learn. This is why the pressure is so incredibly intense. And again, mm-hmm. why it's so amazing when people can be graceful under that pressure.
Yeah.
Like he was, is. Yeah. But I also watched him obsess over a tiny comedy bit. And, like, sometimes you'd think he was crazy for it. And then I'd watch and he'd always get the response he wanted. I mean, most of the time, you know, there was a reason for everything he did. And so that was, like, another
boot camp of getting sorts, if you want to say. Like him work. Because when you get you don't realize they work. Do you know what I mean? They
make it look God. So effortless. Oh my God. And there is so much work and agonizing. It's the agonizing that goes into it beforehand.
Yeah.
And you know, you could just say, whatever, Marty, it's gonna be fine. It's like, no, he sees it as a science and a math, which it is.
It is
truly, especially if you want to do like sketch. Like sketch, you can actually teach it. You know, you can teach all the theories and the math. I mean, you really can teach it.
Yeah.
And so recognizing that was really cool. But I went back to Mad, and I'm just talking now. I don't know if this is what you want to hear.
It's exactly what. So but you went back to the TV show after you had this.
Yes, I had to. I was under contract. But now the only issue was at this point they fired a lot of people, mostly my friends.
Okay.
And we had some rough years. There was a writer's strike that happened.
Right.
It was a weird time. We lost our studios, so now we were like shooting literally like by the LA River in as many locations.
Beth and I came to visit you, and was Paul still there?
That's right. Yeah, he would have been still there.
Yeah.
That was in the good days. That was the heyday when really it felt like college. I mean, it was like all your best friends, and what a time, because like it really is like theater, because you know, because you've done multi-cam shows, you know, where it's just like it is the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
You're kind of getting your live theater aspect, but you know, you're getting paid more than theater people do.
I think I was not in it, but I was like, on a set during, I think it was 2004, and it was Frank.
Cool, Caliendo?
Yeah, doing George W. Bush, like, the debates.
Oh,
yeah,
sure.
It was something
about
the debates.
Right.
And Beth and I were, like, in the audience.
Oh, really?
Like, extras. I think they just were like, we need people.
Awesome.
And so we just sat.
That's hilarious.
Long,
you can see my sister and mom in so many sketches.
Oh, really?
And it's fantastic because they are acting people.
Giving
they are
you.
Giving it to you. They
Not
are reacting
their
to
shot.
Whatever they're... It is adorable. What happened is I went back and I kept on thinking about... Like, people kept on saying, you know, thing about the Wicked thing. And I was like, I just don't know. And so then I listened to the CD and I was like, ugh. You know, and I'd sort of try it. And at this time, I didn't have a vocal coach I was going to regularly. Because again, this is the funny thing about working is that, you know, I kept knowing I should probably work on whatever the next job was going to be. But, you know, and I would fly. And at this time I would fly back and I auditioned for everything after that. You know, I flew back. I was definitely doing red eyes straight into like a morning audition, which I don't do anymore.
Yeah.
It probably was not something I should have done back then, but it was all I could do.
You
know,
you're going to go
like,
for it.
I'm like in LA 1 minute and then the next minute Barcher's making me stand on a chair while I sing I'm in Love with a Wonderful Guy because it's a test. I don't know. Anyway, it was called the chair test. I didn't pass
all
it. I went to Chicago to see one of my friends, Spencer Caden, who was the original Little Sally in Urinetown, on Mad TV for a year.
Oh, okay.
And I'd always loved her. Again, we had Chicago comedy connections, and she's like, oh, I'll get you tickets through Anna, because Anna Gasteyer was now doing Alphabet in Chicago. And that was literally what sealed the deal. Again, it was a weird moment for me, because I was like, when you said people don't do what I do, I mean, I will say that there's certain people, and I feel like there's not many when I can look at them and be like, I look to you as my guide, because Anna is someone who, when I saw her, was like, I recognize you. Yeah. You studied musical theater, you studied classically, actually, but you're also a comedian, and it's like, I wish we'd ever become better friends, because I would have asked her 1,000 questions and be like, could you please be my mentor? Could I sit at your feet and do what you do?
Yeah, yeah.
And when I saw her do it, I became obsessed. I was like, okay, if she can do it, I can do it. I think I can do it. Also, I didn't know how funny the role. I didn't know how funny the show was. I hadn't seen the show. I was like an idiot. I was like, it's like being like, Hamilton is a lot of rap, and it's very clever, and it's about history. Like, it was, I felt that dumb. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Discovering something.
Like seeing,
you guys, there's this thing called Hamilton. Like, I felt like that person.
Yeah.
And I was like, I became obsessed. So here's what's interesting is, again, I didn't know the internet was new. YouTube was just coming out. So what did I do? I was in my dressing room at Mad TV, and I was finding anything I could about Wicked. So I'm one of the bad people. I didn't know. I didn't know.
Yeah.
I was like, here's a video of Eden Espinosa singing. Oh, I decide I like Eden. Eden's rad. I can't be like Eden, you know. And I know all these people. And unfortunately, I'm able to see that people write crap under all of these videos. So now I'm like, okay. Maybe I should avoid that, and that kind of sucks. So wait a minute. These people have no control over this. And then I was like, okay, I guess I'll put that to bed. So then I just became obsessed with the soundtrack again. But it's important that I had the knowledge of that it was out there.
Yeah. You have to avoid that, especially when it's different when you are doing TV or film.
Yeah.
Maybe more so film, because if somebody's going to say something bad about your performance, you already did it.
Yeah.
It's done. But when you read reviews or criticism of a show that you're in, like, you have to do it that night.
Yeah.
So even if it's good, you're like, it can throw you you're kind of like taking in more cooks in the kitchen of your head.
100%.
And so it's rough.
But here's the interesting thing. That happened with Matt a couple times. You know, you get fan mail, or you'd read like that misread. What's funny is, again, comedy and music, it's very different. When I would read something about how they said I wasn't funny, or like a sketch wasn't funny, I'd be like, screw you. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Voice, totally different.
Yeah.
I'd be like, maybe you're right. And I find that interesting. I don't know what that's all about. But I think it has a lot to do with, you know, Elphaba, because they came out here and I auditioned, and then it was like a month before I heard. And at the time they were starting the San Francisco and the Second National Tour. And I'm, promise you when I'm telling you, I was hoping for standby on the tour because I was like, who am I? And I did know that every girl who'd done it so far in New York had done it somewhere else. I mean, it was a farm system at the time. You definitely like were an understudy, then you were a standby, and then, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good idea. And I'm not saying that the team made a bad choice, but I was really shocked. I was
so
dead
far, the
shocked.
The theme here is you're shocked every time you get something. You realize that?
You know, the only thing I wasn't shocked about? Marty's show. I will say that was the height of my confidence. I remember being really nervous about the final audition, and I had a moment where I was like, you got this. I was like, you go in there. I was like, you're going to do your impressions. Like, who's doing Ellen right now?
Yeah.
You know? I was like, no, you're funny. Like, that was the one time I like snapped myself out of it, and I was like, no, you got this.
Yeah.
Never to return again, that confidence. No, just kidding. I've had it at other times, but it definitely was never as... That was the height of
it's
it, for
rare
sure.
That everything
because I was in my element.
Like,
yeah, I felt like I felt like there's nothing that I feel like I can't do when it comes to this job description.
Yeah.
And that's hard to find, you know? The only other thing, the only other job that was like, that was Funny Girl, where I literally was like, okay, my whole life makes sense. Yeah. You know what I mean? Oh, Funny Girl.
So you got Elphaba on Broadway.
I got Elphaba on Broadway.
And you were shocked
by that. I was shocked by that. And what's funny is I just left Mad TV because it was, I was supposed to do like 6 more episodes, and they had a shortened, truncated season, which we later realized it was because they were going to cancel them. I got Wicked. I remember my friends, like Ike was like, what? Like, no. They were like, are you kidding me? And we were freaking out. And then like 2 weeks later, my friends were still on Mad call me. They're like, yeah, we're at this restaurant. If you want to come, we just got canceled. They're like, so people were like, hey, is there like a, how about a monkey? Could I play one of them flying monkey gigs? Like, can you get, because I felt like a real genius. I was like, woof, got out of that in time.
Yeah.
I'm going to jump into this. But what was a little weird about it is, and who knows, maybe this will seem like an excuse, but I immediately, it's that thing where like, I don't know that I ever sang it for the first few months with as much confidence as I did in my audition. Hmm. Because again, until thoughts come in here, until outside story comes in, you're fine. And then all of a sudden, if a story comes in like, I'm the first person to do this on Broadway without having done it before, this is probably a mistake. Or
sure.
Or I'd run into people at the, because now the LA company was here and I went there to train with the music director there.
Okay.
And people's reaction was understandably surprised because it really was the first, you know, and I'm not saying this because I'm any great, I'm literally on record saying I thought it was shocking too. But they were like, whoa, you must be good. And so the second you say that to me, I'm like, what if I'm not? Yeah, you know, it's pathetic. Yeah. And it was different being in a stuffy room. All of a sudden, now I'm singing Wizard and I. It's like, oh, it's not quite like when I was in that echoey audition room and I had adrenaline and now I'm feeling weird and now I'm listening to myself and now I'm judging myself.
Yeah.
And also, you know, unfortunately, I had sort of a similar thing that happened back in college where all of a sudden, like, my voice is feeling funny and I have had acid reflux issues. Yeah. And I went in. This was like weeks before I was supposed to go. And I still, again, wonder if, like, I should have gone to a second doctor. But he's like, oh, it looks like you had some sort of a hemorrhage. Now it's healing, but you should not. You
this
should,
is in college or should, before
no,
Wicked.
This was literally happening right before I was supposed to leave for New York to start rehearsals.
I see.
And I've never told anyone this, but who cares? I mean, it all worked out. But this was a very difficult way to start. He was like, you should probably go on vocal rest for 2 weeks, you know. You should probably, you know, delay your arrival in New York. And I was like, oh, God, like, I'm damaged goods. Like, I'm arriving. And again, it's so mental. Singing is so mental. Not only performing, but this is a physical, physiological thing that you're doing. And especially if you're doing it 8 times a week, the sports psychology that goes into it is very interesting. I mean, like, Elphaba is the one time I did feel, it was the one time this theater nerd felt close to being an athlete.
Yeah.
You know, because it is you are so mental.
Definitely an athlete.
It is so mental. It's astonishing. And I just hadn't learned that yet. Because, like, if you compare that to what I was doing in Marty's show, we were idiots running around being idiots. You know, there was no discipline. There was no, I have to warm up. The warm up, this is a fun detail. Brooke Szeszmanskis, his warm up was going down the stairs going, and I was like, what is that? He's like, do you really want to know? He's like, it's in Songs from a New World, which he was in. He's on the album. I know you suddenly. And he's like, as long as I've got that, then I'm warmed up. I love that so much. Anyway, sorry, Brooks. But yeah, it was like I arrived nervous.
Feeling
I arrived
like
scared.
Injured.
And that is not the way to start a show.
Yeah.
And I had myself convinced that, and then on top of it, I had to fly back 3 days before. This was already set before I got Wicked. I was in this Judd Apatow movie called Funny People. Please don't look it up. Please don't look up the scene. You won't even be able to find me. You won't even realize that it's me. You would be shocked.
Okay.
Not proud of it, but it became one thing. It started off as one thing, as an extra bit, and became, what I'm saying is there's a scene in there that was not in the script initially that I kind of just had to end up doing.
I see.
I'm not naked or anything, but it is it's a sex scene with Adam Sandler that my husband to this day doesn't let me live down, because it's crazy.
Okay.
And I had to fly back to shoot one tiny scene, and I remember it was like 3 a.m, and Judd was literally like, hey, you're starting on Broadway soon, I should get you home. And I was like, haha, yeah, fully got a cold on the way back. I knew I was going to get sick.
Yeah.
So I was like sick, had a cold, you know, on the first day. And I remember, you know,
you get your put in, but if you were sick, you can say, I'm sick.
No, it was just a cold. Forget it. I wasn't going to not do it.
And the tower's down. Well, let's keep the show going.
Exactly. Well, and here's the other thing is that now I'd say that.
Yeah.
Because I've since done it on tour and realized there's no gold medal for pushing yourself. But I
didn't know.
The
understudy who was like, 100%. Would love to go
guess
on
what?
For,
they won't notice. No, I didn't know
you,
any of that.
I know. You have like this certain, but you don't want to look weak either. You don't want, like, when you're getting the job, you're like, oh, I got to show up.
And I'll tell you, again, this began this confusing thing of, now I'm seen as, I will share, again, I shouldn't have seen this, but this was the last time that I read a message board. And I'm sorry, but it's too funny, so I'm glad I did. But there were some fans that were like, this is ridiculous. You're already stunt casting Elphaba, like they put a TV star on. And someone rushed to my defense and was like, whoa, Nicole Parker is not a TV celebrity. And I was like, okay, I mean, thanks, but
okay, that's an interesting way to defend me.
Brilliant. It was, it made me smile.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, there's no way that, like, when the stunt casting that gets annoying is when people are sacrificing their show's integrity or whatever, the talent, for somebody who can't really do it so that they can sell tickets.
Yeah.
And I think that they're saying, you know, because you were on TV, yes, but you cannot get that part if you can't do it. It's just not possible.
But
they wouldn't
do it. I will say that people, more than one person, and I, let me say, that family there. The Wicked hires such quality people that no matter if you're which company, it doesn't matter. Yeah. They hire the same kind of quality people that you're like, everyone should have their own one-woman show, one-man show. Everyone's a genius. Yeah. Everyone's a comedian. Like, everyone is brilliant. And so at first they had perceptions. I love all of them, but I did get more than once from a couple people, like an assistant stage manager, like, I'm very impressed. Like, cause I came into rehearsal and I had my lines memorized, but they were just like, it's hard when you're like, I danced to MAME in my bedroom at 8, but you are literally not seeing any of that. You're going, I'm so impressed. Like, we didn't know what to expect getting someone from TV. And I want to be like, I'm not from TV.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm not from TV. I was singing Hoosier, right? Like, Mad Mushroom Pizza. Dream. And I sang,
like,
yes.
This has been like,
it really confuses you. You're like, wait a minute. Like, why are you seeing me that way? I don't get it.
Right.
And then you're like, oh, I get it. I'm not in New York. And there is a thing, if I don't appear to have been in New York pounding the pavement and putting my dues in, like, I fully get it. I fully get that it appears that I just, you know, sauntered on in.
Right.
And so it was weird. So, like, the way it all began was very strange. Yeah. And,
so my pudding
was the day that Sully landed his plane in the Hudson. Can you believe that? I finished a show and they're like, there's a plane in the Hudson. And
oh my God.
I have to say, it was probably the least interested party in all of the country.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, okay. And then I went and cried in the shower. And I was like, I can't do that ever again. That was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. I'll tell you what, when you watch, because you shadow the person before, you know, you go in and you stand backstage, you run around following the alphabet. And I did it again on tour 3 years later, and it was the same thing, where you watch it and you're like, I mean, no one looks more badass when their alphaba, I'm not talking about myself, but like, they've just finished No Good Deed. They are in the zone. Their eyes are set and focused and they're taking some water. And I mean, you're like, you're the coolest person I know right now.
Yeah.
My hat's off to you. Yeah. You're so rad.
Yeah.
You know, but when you're watching it, knowing you have to do it, you're like, I can't do that. I can't do that. And I did it 3 years later after I'd done it 200 times. I was like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
I
had to follow Groff around for 2 weeks, and it's not like it's the same thing.
No, but
you watch Groff. He would like so, you know, effortlessly just walk around, just be like, hang out. And we like just talked.
Yeah.
And then he'd be like, oh, I have to go on stage now. Let's go go down to the stage. I'll show you where I walk out, where I get the scepter, and how I hide it under my cape and all this stuff. And he literally is talking to me, and I'm like, oh my God, you gotta. You know, in my mind, I'm like, you have to be on that stage in 10 seconds, 9 seconds, 8 seconds. Stop talking to me.
Right.
And then he just walks out like it's no big deal and the crowd goes crazy. And I'm like, my God, how am I ever going to get to that place where it's just so easy and effortless? Mm-hmm. You know, do it 600 times.
You're like, I got it on lock.
Now, I'm like, oh, is there a show tonight?
You're like, I'm doing this in my dressing room right now in between entrances.
Yeah.
You know,
but you watch that person and you're like, how am I ever going to do it?
You're in awe. This is a very nerdy thing to say, but it's very specific. But there are a few things I love as much as being backstage on a Broadway stage and you're talking to the person and they're a person. And then a matter of 5 feet, all of a sudden, they're in a magical world. And you are still here in your street clothes.
Yeah.
But they're literally now living a different reality and they're... just they're doing something awesome and you're like, wow, within the space of 5 feet is just like a portal into magic. I don't know.
Yeah.
It few things give me the chills like that. I freaking love it. Anyway. Yeah. So I did my first week doing Alpha was so crazy because you're like, I guess I'll go till I collapse. I don't know. That's how I was when I did all those flights. You know what I mean? I remember thinking I can't do this at like 4 a.m. the first time. And I went, you know, no one expects me to be able to do this. So I'll just go until I can't. And you know, I did it. And this time I was like, yeah, I'll just go until I can't anymore. I mean, I can't even explain the adrenaline of like, you guys, I'm drinking, before the doors pull open, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, in some ways, I will say there are so many jobs I've done since that if I'm like stressed out or in the moment or it's a tech week, I'm like, it's not as hard as Alpha. I literally will say that. And I'm like, I remember the first night. I'm like, nothing's as hard as that. I was like, I can do this. I can do it. Doesn't mean that I've never been afraid since or whatever, but things do get a lot into perspective after you do that part.
Yeah.
And so it was a little bummer, a bit of a bummer, because like at the time the fans were still very much, I mean, it moved on to so many other shows since then, Spring Awakening, A Book of Mormon, and you know, but at the time that was still sort of at the area where people were, you know, filming in the front row and you could see them and that was weird for me. And people at the stage were literally said things to me like they would talk about who they were pulling for to get the role instead of me.
Yeah.
And someone went, you're getting better. And that really shocked me. I was like, oh God, you can say that to my face. Okay, I thought that this was just, I thought if I avoid like the internet.
If I avoided and the then fan mail, online.
You know, from MadTV would come in, but then it would be other people and it'd be like, I've seen some of your YouTube clips and I know you got off to a rough start. And I was like, oh my God, I did? Like, oh, I didn't know. Like, I thought I was doing okay. And so even though I tried to avoid everything, and this is something that sounds like it's fake, but you know, I promise you the Into the Woods story is real. Unfortunately, that comedian father, why am I a comedian? Well, he's out of the picture. So really, I had no choice but to. That man emailed me, and I shouldn't have opened the email, but he would email me about twice a year. And he emailed me a cut paste of things that people were saying online. Not a joke. So unfortunately, what? I did read the meanest things said about me.
Wow.
I mean, I stopped at a certain point, but like at that point, you're looking at a car accident, right?
Yeah.
And it was terrible. It was my Alphabet experience.
Like, look at this.
He's like, well, I can't find out anything about you because you don't talk to me. So here's, he's dad of the year, you guys. Wow. He was like, so apparently I can only find out things on the internet and apparently it's not going so well. And you know, he didn't cut and paste. I should say he was saying things that were, I don't think he would know how to cut and paste.
But he was trying to be shitty.
You know, it's too bad. They're saying that you have no business being on stage. They say you have no business singing, you know. And what's interesting to me is it was my second Broadway show. So you'd think that the first time around, when I was out there doing the spoof of Wicked, that I'd be nervous. I wasn't nervous at all. I was like, I belong here. I'm a singer. I've sung all my life. I trained. I did all this stuff. And now, this is the most dangerous thing that can happen to a performer, is if you, like you said, start to believe the story around you.
Right.
Which, again, we start to end up, if things go poorly, if we have a tough year, you know, while things are going well, the story doesn't, only a story we're getting told is everything's going to work out.
Right.
And so, because it's such a mental game to that role, it was, I mean, my problem was not vocal and my problem was not physical. Everyone has a story and a scar from that show, but mine was purely psychological and emotional because it was like, how do I go out there now? Thinking, imagining that. And we're talking probably five people. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
there's also hundreds of people there that hopefully enjoyed themselves. They seemed to.
Absolutely.
But, you know, we only care about those five people or those imaginary people
what
without
I've also
faces.
Learned, like, look, if there is an issue with you as a performer, you don't get to come back the next week. And not because of the audience, because of the people in charge.
Yeah.
And so you kind of have to just put your trust
that's right.
in
the people
who
put you
created
there.
The damn
that's
thing.
Right. That's right.
And they know what is working and what's not.
That's right. That's why when I say, why did they put me in? At their, well, they knew better than I did.
Yeah. And also, you know, what you're talking about, those two, the difference between Little Me and between Elphaba is...
Oh, it's Fame Becomes Me. Oh,
that's terrible. I'm sorry.
I'm
so
know,
sorry.
But Little Fame Me is a better me. Name. It
so
was supposed
sorry.
To be called If I'd Saved Ahead, Wouldn't Be Here, which is a 10 times better title, but they went with Fame Becomes Me. Anyways,
so
go on.
So sorry, Fame Becomes Me.
Oh, no, sorry.
So the difference between those is that you were creating the thing with your friends.
Oh, that is a huge difference.
It,
of
and
course.
And you're stepping into something that people take as Bible, as like,
what? Yes, 100%.
As like sacred material.
Yes.
And so,
and
you know,
you are compared to, I feel like if you, it was a, sorry, I totally interrupted you.
No, it's fine. I'm just saying that's exactly what, you know, Book of Mormon compared to me going into Hamilton is.
Exactly.
It's sacred text, both of them, but I got to be the one who created the Book of Mormon one. And
so no one gets to decide if you were doing it wrong because this is the first time they're seeing it.
Right.
Instead of you're doing it wrong compared to blank person.
Or what I listened to
I would get told I held my suitcase weirder than that other girl or I did the so-and-so riff and I would not know what they were talking about.
Right.
And I would feel like for a fan, they'd watch me and then behind me, you know, it's almost like that diagram of caveman to man.
Yeah.
Behind me is Stephanie, Eden. It's literally the list of all the girls walking behind me and I'm getting compared against all of them, which I understand, you know, but like, you can't compare at all to the feeling of like, well, you've never seen this before. So the way I decide it is the way that it is, you know, and I get that. And let me also say, oh, so many fans were amazing. And the letters you get, it's a true honor to do that part. It's a straight up honor to do that part.
Oh, yeah.
It really is, just because of what it gives you as a person and the other people that you meet. You know what I mean? And like, you know, and I learned such crazy lessons. And you learn that you can push yourself further than you thought you could. And that, you know, it doesn't matter about those people. It's like, I met gracious, wonderful people at the stage door. I mean, there's this story that my husband reminds me always of, and we still refer to it. because it was a good turning point for me, and it was like somewhere in the summer, and it was like a Girl Scout buyout or something, so we just thought it would be an easy Saturday afternoon, you know, but they were kind of dead, and I think it was because they were raced around through that backstage tour. I think they were exhausted, like, yeah. You know what I mean? So yeah. Excited, so amped for Wicked.
Yeah.
And he came in afterwards, and I was just, rah, 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 you know, the thing, I'm, like, I'm not even going to go out there, whatever, I'm not even, poor me, and he's like, just go out there, you should always go out there, and there was this perfect little girl, I'll never forget her, and I don't even know how she knew who I was, and she was blonde with a pink raincoat with white flowers, and she had Down syndrome, and she looked right at me, and she was like, hi, Elphaba, to hug me, and her mom goes, this is Rosie, and she goes, and we've been talking about Elphaba, and how Elphaba's different, and that's okay, and she looked at me, and she went, I'm different, and that's okay, and I went back in, and I told everyone in the theater, we all started crying, and literally to this day, I'll be complaining about something and stuff to be like, do it for Rosie, you know? And that's just what we say, you know, it's like, do it for Rosie.
Yeah.
So yeah, by the time, look, it was great by the end. Again, friends for life. Allie, Mozzie, and I became best friends. We grew up 15 minutes apart from each other.
Wow.
Do you know how many Elphabas and Glindas are from Orange County? It's a little creepy. Stephanie Block.
Yeah.
Eden Espinoza. Me. Aaron Mackey. Allie. Lindsay Mendez. I'm telling you, that's already seven.
Wow.
And then if you want to talk California, you're talking Teal Wicks, you're talking Marcy Dodd. It is
weird.
It's a little bit weird.
That's weird.
And we were all there at the same time, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I am very glad that I got to go do it on tour again. That was like closing up chapter. That was an open, it was like, it would, I'd be like making dinner in my kitchen in LA and I'd be like, steal stuff. I got it. I put on, this is nerdy. I'd put on Defy Gravity, just karaoke and just start singing. I'd be like, I still got it. And I'd never finish. Cause guess what? No, guess what? I'd be like, so if you, oh, fuck that. I'm going to keep making dinner. I was like, I don't have to do this. I'm not getting paid. This is not my job. I'm not going to do it. But it always bothered me. And by that point I had a new vocal coach who's changed my whole voice. He reshaped everything. He's amazing. And it just came up, and I'm very lucky that Allie was going to do it. And I, you know, reached out to them and was like, I think you're having a switchover. Could I do it? And I'm so grateful that they said yes. And I got to do it in cities where there's less pressure and on tour, there's less pressure, you know? And I was like, I get why people normally do it the other way around.
Sure.
If I had my druthers, yes, I would have done that. Cause I think it makes sense. You need to get it in there is no way. If the first time you were ever doing it was on Broadway, and now since they've had other girls do that. Now I'm not, Lindsay did it cold, you know, and hats off to them because it's hard. But I mean, but truly people didn't even know who I was really in New York. They didn't remember me from Marty's show. I didn't have a fan base of any kind, you know. And it gets in your head too because some Elfies have like developed a fan base that have clever names. And I'm like, I don't have like the Parkerites. Maybe I don't have a name that works that well with it, but... But I always feel like a bit of a failure. I was like, I don't have a group.
I'm a Parkerite.
Well, calm down. Will you hold the monthly meeting? So you'll be Fine Arts Commissioner.
I will. I'm going to find Rosie and we'll get together. Anyway, I feel like you have so much experience.
I didn't mean for this to be a self-validation pod. This has been very empowering, Rory, but I don't think it was the point.
It's funny because when I asked you to be on the podcast, you were like, oh my gosh, no, you should have other people. And
that
I can't
true.
Think
Accurate.
Of a person who I would want to have more on it because of all the different life experiences that you've had and because of how successful you've been in more than one thing. And, you know, to me, that is what quote unquote living the dream is constantly figuring out different ways to do that and be creative. And you've done it and you continue to do it, you know,
still trying, you know, remarkable. I just have no other skills. I have to tell you, I love that you call it living the dream because I don't know if that's a fun little fact. Rondi Reed, who is back on Broadway as Morrible. She was Morrible when I was there. It was first Jane Howe to Shell. I mean, they're both the most amazing women I've ever met. And on Saturday nights, we would sing a song, and it was "Living the Dream." Yes, I'm living the dream, living the dream on Broadway. And Rondi probably still sings it every Saturday night.
That's amazing.
I love that you, and you know, that was also part of it. We constantly were singing that song to remind ourselves.
Absolutely.
You know,
You sing that. I mean, that's why I called it this, is because it's not as inspirational as it sounds.
No, there's no exclamation point.
Living the
if
dream.
If it was, exactly. There's no no punctuation.
Yeah.
So that's what's very smart about it.
Well,
it is not
actually,
living the dream exclamation
point. I started
point.
It with not being capitalized, and my husband was like, that just looks too weird and unprofessional when it's like listed on Apple iTunes. So he was like, you have to capitalize it. It looks like a terrible mistake. But I was like, I just don't want, I mean, it's like a black and white profile. I was like, I don't want people to think I'm like living the dream.
No, it's perfect. You fully get it. It's like living the dream. Yeah. I mean, it's just like next week I'll have to go to, have several Mormon in-laws, which is a whole thing we can talk about later, where I will inevitably be singing in front of 60 people.
Yeah.
Wicked, because that's what I'm asked to do and that's what I have to do.
Yeah.
And then someone will come up to me because I don't know any of them because there's so many of them. Right. And they'll be like, I think I saw you. It was last January. And it always kills me. And I'm like, I was in the show 25 years ago. But what I always do is I go, was she good? Yeah, it was me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You need to have your set lines.
Was it a bad? It was someone else. Would have been another study. Wouldn't me. It wasn't me.
Wasn't me.
And that's the perception, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, you have to have your stock lines because you do get the same things over and over.
Well, thank you so much for validating me. I my goal is to not feel like an imposter in either one of those worlds, and you made me feel a little less like an imposter today.
An imposter. I know what you're saying, but you are loved in both, and that is just the curse of being so talented.
Oh, boy.
The curse of being able to play in both playgrounds is feeling like you don't belong to either.
That is right. That is, you nailed it on the head.
You do. You belong to both. And you're just going to be continue to be successful in both. And I'm just really excited to get to like sit down with you and talk with you for this long. Like, that's such a treat because we're always like passing and we
know
each other through people. But
this is the kind of talk we try to have at a dinner party or at a loud bar, and it just wouldn't work out.
This is and it's literally why I'm doing this podcast.
It's smart. Just save your voice. It's smart.
I save my voice, have my conversations with friends one-on-one. No, but you know, it's just like you never get to talk to your fellow actors about the business or like what you're going through.
And it's helpful. This podcast, I think, is genius, and it's helpful, I think, to both fans and artists alike. I mean, it really, like I said, it's kind of where I got the idea of like, don't decide that, you know, you know, it's like you hear things and you feel closer to everyone and you feel better.
Good.
Your podcast makes people feel better. Well, certainly made me feel better today.
Good. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. And next time you should have Sherry Mulavi on. She was Rapunzel.
Got it. I'm going to get the I'm actually going to do a 10-part series investigative podcast.
Serial style.
Serial style on the Rapunzel tragedy.
That's good.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Audition, side job, swimming upstream. Believe it or not, you're living the dream.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.